ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀಅದ್ವೈತ ಗರಾಧಾ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ
ಹರೇ. I just like to apologize for being late. No excuses, only apology. Now, before we start speaking, we always chant Hare Krishna. This creates the right atmosphere for speaking on spiritual knowledge. This is chanting the names of God. So we will chant and we request, if you can also join in, that would be very nice, if you feel so inclined. So this chanting is very simple. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is called the Maha Mantra. Before chanting this, we'll chant some other chants, and then we'll chant Hare Krishna. So, professor who is introducing us, whose name I didn't catch, it's a little difficult for me to catch Russian names.
He's not professor, he's a combination.
No. Well, anyway, yes.
he doesn't introduce himself.
So, he has said that this Krishna conscious movement is Indian culture and religion. So, of course, that is not untrue. Culturally, this Krishna conscious movement is very much rooted in India. But in a larger sense, it is more than simply India. Real culture and religion must be universal. Particularly, religion must be universal. Because religion means to understand God. And God, of course, is not Indian or non-Indian, Russian or non-Russian. God is as He is. And religion means to understand Him and to follow His instructions. So, actually, Krishna consciousness, in the broadest sense, it is a philosophical, cultural, and scientific movement. It is not another sectarian religion. We may think, well, we already have so many different religious groups. So what is the need of another? So actually, there's no need of any more religious groups. So what is needed is proper philosophical understanding. So many different people may be fighting in the name of God. But what is really important for us is to understand who is God. Now, you're all scientists and academicians. So you know that in the history of the Western world, there was a rift or a division between science and religion. Because it was considered that religion is non-scientific. Religion, it was considered, is simply based upon sentiment. Simply, we are told, you must believe. But science means to ask why. Just like Isaac Newton, it is said, was sitting under the apple tree. And he saw the apple falling, and he thought, why? And from such thinking, understanding of gravity began. So in this way, scientific knowledge was gradually developed, by asking the question, why? So at least in the Western world, among the general body of scholars, it was considered that religion cannot answer the question why. Because religion was generally presented in a dogmatic way. Simply, you must believe what I say, otherwise you go to hell. And even here, if you don't believe what I say, we'll torture you. Torture you. Torture means they put your body on a rack and there are so many different tortures. Even in this life, we'll make it hell for you if you don't believe what I say. So gradually in the Western world, the humanistic, empiricistic worldview became predominant. That life has simply come into being as a combination of chemicals, and that there is no particular meaning to life. With death, everything is finished. In religious terms, this is called atheism. However, atheism does not satisfy the soul. We may say that man is simply a combination of chemicals. But this does not explain why man has a spiritual craving, spiritual desires. We see that animals, they are satisfied if they get food, shelter, and sex. And human beings of not very developed intelligence, they're also satisfied if they get food, shelter, and sex. But those who are more intellectually developed or spiritually developed, they feel within their heart the need to know more. Freud based his psychological theories on Darwin's theory. He gave his theory why people believed in God. His theory was that in ancient times, pre-civilized man used to live in groups. And in each group there would be one predominant male who would dominate others by his strength. So he would also dominate all the women and everything. So all the other men, they respected him and envied him. Respected him and feared him. They respected him and feared him. So Freud's theory is that deep in our subconsciousness, because primitive man respected and feared a strong leader, therefore man feels the need to respect and fear God, an unknown person called God. So this is an absurd oversimplification of man's spiritual desires. This is an absurd, means ridiculous, oversimplification of man's deeply felt spiritual needs. Freud, of course, he only had experience of the Western world, where God is feared. If you don't believe in God, you go to hell forever. But, at least in our Vedic culture, God is, we are taught to love God as a child loves the father, a friend loves the friend, or a lover loves a lover. So, a child loves the father, of course there will be some element of respect and fear there also. But the main emotion is one of love and affection. Now, it is very interesting to note, actually I first came to Russia in 1986, and I didn't come again till last year, so I didn't learn any Russian. So, when I came in 1986, I didn't come dressed like this. It was a little bit difficult situation at that time. So, when we went to Leningrad, they showed us the Museum of Atheism. And we were told that in the Russian school, in the Soviet schools, at every level of education, they must learn about atheism. So, atheism was being regularly taught and had been done so for several generations. Atheistic philosophy. Now, if atheism is actually a rational fact, and if belief in God is simply a sentiment, then we would have thought that after several generations, the people of the USSR would be confirmed atheists. We might think that a few simple people might still believe in God. But it would be expected that the intellectual, educated people, they would naturally not believe in God, having been educated in the proper way. However, this was not the fact. In 1971, when Srila Prabhupada, our guru, came to Russia, he predicted that the Russians will become first-class theists. The government was training them how to become first-class atheists. But Prabhupada predicted they would become first-class theists. And I personally saw, when I first came to Russia in 1986, that many very intelligent people were taking up this movement. Just like the devotee who was translating for us, I asked him, well, what are you doing? So he said, I'm a student. What are you studying? Electronic systems for nuclear missiles. Missiles means they go and land on the Americans, blow all the Americans to pieces. That's the idea. So, of course, very intelligent person. We heard that when Indira Gandhi came to Russia and met Leonid Brezhnev, there was some report in the newspaper in India that Mr. Leonid, God bless his soul, had said something to Indira Gandhi, that there are two main dangers to our Soviet youth. One is rock and roll music, and the other is Hare Krishna. So this is very interesting, because the people, if they're educated in atheism in a so-called rational way, then why should they be interested in theistic philosophy? You might think that a few foolish people or a few crazy people, they might be interested. But we see that many, many intelligent people are taking this up. So if we examine psychologically, as Mr. Freud is supposed to do, then we could conclude that there is an innate desire to understand God within the heart of people.
To understand God?
Yes. That is in the heart of all people. That feeling that we want to understand God, that in itself suggests that there must be God. Just like we have so many natural feelings. We have a natural feeling that we want to drink water because there is such a thing as water which is valuable for us to take. We have a natural feeling that we want to eat food because there is such a thing as food which satisfies our hunger. So that all over the world, people from all different cultures, they feel a need to understand God, suggests that there is a person, an entity, God, to fulfill that need. And that feeling for God cannot be crushed by any amount of atheistic propaganda. However, especially in the Western world, because there was this division between science and religion. Therefore, people who wanted to develop their religious tendencies, they became very confused. Because in terms of philosophy, atheistic or materialistic science seemed to be predominant. Science seems to have all the answers. However, despite so much technological and scientific improvement, we find that science, it cannot satisfy man's basic emotional needs, and particularly cannot satisfy his spiritual needs. So therefore, when Krishna consciousness was preached in the Western countries, many, many people took it up. They did not take it up because they thought it was something Indian, but because it philosophically gave the answers to all their questions. Now we find that many religious scriptures in the world, they are just written in such a style that you simply believe or you go to hell. But in the Vedic literatures, such an approach is not predominant. The Vedic literatures are records of questions and answers between gurus and disciples, in which the disciples, they express their doubts. The guru will speak something, that this is true. And the disciples say, why is it true? Why should I believe this? And then the guru explains. And if further doubts arise, then again they are explained. Just like we see in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the most famous book of spiritual knowledge. In this case, Arjuna is the disciple, and Krishna, who is God himself, is the teacher, the guru. Now, Arjuna was faced with the prospect of death. He was on a battlefield. He wasn't afraid for his own death, but he was lamenting that so many people have to die. So in this situation, he was lamenting. Now, Krishna explained to him what is the nature of life and death in a very scientific way. The first teaching of Bhagavad Gita is this. I'll recite the Sanskrit. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumarang yovanam jara tatha dehan karaprabhtiya dhiras tatra na muhyati. It means that there is the body and there is the owner of the body, which means the soul. Now, the body is always changing from childhood to boyhood to youth to middle age to old age. The body is always changing, and the final change of the body is called death. But when the body dies, the soul continues to exist, because the soul or the person is always separate from the body. Now, according to medical science or even common sense, the composition of the body is always changing. Always within the body, different transformations are going on. We are always breathing in and out. Our food is being digested. In this way, the body is always changing. And practically, if you chemically analyze the body of someone at age 1 and at age 20, you'll find that all the chemicals have changed. A completely different set of chemicals is there. Now, if we accept that the person is only the body, then the person at 1 year old is a different person to the person at 20 years old. But in our practical life, we don't see this is true. Just like here we have Edward and Edward's mother. So, she is seeing, this is my son. Now, if you say, no, he's not your son, because when he was born and now, all the chemicals have changed. I don't think Edward's mother would accept that. She says, no, he's my son. But exactly, what is your son? Is it the chemicals? No, because all the chemicals have changed. Well, you could say that it's the mind. But the mind that is also changing all the time. The mind is changing at every second. Sometimes you see someone, he's just sitting very peacefully, then all of a sudden he becomes very angry. And particularly the whole way of thinking changes in course of time. The mind of a 3-year-old and the mind of a 30-year-old means there's a lot of change. We expect that a 30-year-old, his mind must be different to that of a 3-year-old. If a 3-year-old starts crying for no reason and passes stool on the floor, nobody minds. But if a 30-year-old does that, they'll take him to the psychiatric hospital. So the body chemicals are changing always, and the mind is also changing. So what stays the same? We say the person, that means the soul within the body. And another example is that when someone dies, we say, oh, he has gone away. In every language, in every culture of the world, when someone dies, they say he has gone away. So someone may be crying, oh, my father has gone away. Now you may say, no, he's lying there. It's the same body. But now you say he has gone away. So what has gone away? The body is still there. Actually, everyone can understand that the soul has gone away. So this Krishna is teaching in Bhagavad Gita, very scientifically and philosophically, that the body is always changing, but the person stays the same. So even after the demise of the body, the person continues to exist. Now you may say, well, that doesn't sound very scientific to me. Scientific means you should be able to see it. But in science also, there are many things that we cannot see, which are accepted on circumstantial evidence. Especially when we talk about more subtle energies. Just like radio waves, no one ever saw them. But by their effect, we can understand they exist. Or subatomic particles, no one ever saw them. But by mathematical calculations and by seeing the effect in an experiment, we can understand they exist. So similarly, by extrapolation, we can understand scientifically, logically, the existence of the soul. Extrapolation, I don't know how to say it in Russian, that's your job.
Investigation.
No, it means by seeing one thing, you can understand something else. So this is one way to understand. Of course, in Vedic empiricism, this is not considered the best way to understand. Because we can always make mistakes. And we see that in science, there are many, many mistakes made. They make one theory, then they change it to another theory, and another theory, and another theory. So ultimately, in Vedic empiricism, hearing from authorities is considered the best way to receive knowledge. But because we also have, we feel the need to be intellectually satisfied. Therefore, the Vedic literatures present us knowledge in a manner which also appeals to our rational sense. So in the modern age, people are very much in need of a clue how we can get peace in human society. Despite so much scientific, technological, and intellectual advancement, human society is not very happy. There is so much fighting. Different people fighting each other. Hot wars, cold wars. Fighting even in the home. Father and son. So human society in terms of actual civilization seems to be going backwards rather than forwards. We think that if we build bigger buildings and bigger space rockets, we become more advanced. But if we can't even live together peacefully as human beings, then what is the meaning of our advancement? Sometimes we see the dog's wedding, in which all the dogs come together and fight and make noises at each other. And they fight by barking and with their teeth and with their claws. So, in human society, we are also fighting with space rockets and tanks and ballistic missiles and Star Wars. They're putting big radars into space. Just like we understand that the Americans, they have some satellite out in space that if there is a 10 ruble coin lying on the street in Moscow, they can read what is written on it. Uncle Sam is watching you. You know who Uncle Sam is?
Sam.
Okay. So much intelligence. America has attracted so many intelligent people from all over the world, using so much intelligence, spending billions of dollars. Intercontinental, ballistic, nuclear, dog's wedding. It's the same thing. So where is the advancement? Simply advancement on the level of dogs. So there's very much need of proper philosophical understanding. The good brains of the world, instead of being used how to blow other people's brains to pieces, they should use their good brains to see what is the real purpose of life. This same question, why? We are asking why the apple fell from the tree. Why radio waves are going through. How to use the radio waves. But the real question, why? What is the purpose of life? Why are we here? Why are we suffering? Why do we have to die when we don't want to die? Why do we grow old when we don't want to grow old? These questions should be asked. And actually, the Vedic culture, the Vedic literatures, they give scientific, succinct answers to all these questions. And therefore, it is being accepted in intellectual circles throughout the world. It is a little difficult for many people to understand, because we are talking about very subtle subject matters. Just like how many people can understand nuclear physics? Because we're dealing with very fine particles. The finest particle of all is the soul. To understand intellectually is very difficult. There is another way to understand also, which is simply by devotion to God. If we know who God is and dedicate ourselves to love with love to Him, then the very highest knowledge of spiritual understanding is revealed to us within our heart. So anyway, I would like to request you as intellectuals and as human beings, because after all, being a human being is more important than being an intellectual. By the grace of God, you have got developed intelligence. I would request you to study this Vedic culture and philosophy. And whichever academic
whichever academic profession that you are following, you'll find there are many interesting things for you. Just like in Russia we find there is much interest in life on other planets, parapsychology and all those things. Now you'll be very interested to know that in the Vedic literatures there are descriptions of different planets and life on the different planets. Or even if you don't believe in all these things, even if you are a very hard-headed astronomer, you will find in Vedic astronomy so much knowledge of the different planets. This knowledge of the different planets was known to the ancient Vedic sages. Just like due to astronomical observation, scientists, they can predict accurately at what time the sun will arise in any place in the world on any day. But you can do exactly the same thing with the ancient Vedic astronomical knowledge. In other words, the Western astronomers, they didn't really discover anything because the knowledge was already there in the Vedas. Because Ved means knowledge. Not only spiritual knowledge, but all disciplines. And you may be very interested to know, especially anthropologists, that according to the Vedic literature, previously the Vedic culture was spread all over the world. Just like we find in this republic, that many people, they still follow a pre-Christian religious system. And previously, that similar kind of religion was followed all over Europe. We find in Scandinavia, they worshipped what they call the Nordic gods. And those people, the Vikings, they were very warlike people. Warlike fighters. Yeah. Vikings. So we understand this word Scandinavia has come from the Vedic god of war, whose name is Skanda. There are so many, just like the ancient Celts in Britain, Ireland, Northern France. They had a culture and religion which is extremely similar to the Vedic culture. All over the world, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Incas in South America. And in North America, the Red Indians, they actually had a developed culture in which they respected all forms of life. But what happened was there was a very strong propaganda that the only culture should be the Christian culture. And we are taught that everything previous to Christianity was simply primitive. That people had no culture, no values, they were simply living like animals. But actually now anthropologists, they are researching and finding that this was only propaganda and not anything else. That the Christian world was able to dominate over all the pre-Christian religions because they had a very, a very aggressive mentality. That Christianity spread due to an aggressive mentality. But so many cultures were there all over the world, which they were very aesthetic, not aesthetic, and they had very developed values. So, this, the Vedic culture, as we understand from the Vedic literatures, that was previously spread all over the world. And although we have no argument with anybody in particular, the proper history should be understood. The real history should be understood. This Vedic culture, way of life, that was spread all over the world. Now the same thing happened when the British came to India. They just presumed that they were culturally superior. Everyone thinks like that. We are British, therefore we are best. We are Russian, therefore we are best.
We are American, therefore we are the best.
Now the Americans are very proud. But after some time they won't be so prominent. One time the Egyptians were prominent, one time the Greeks were prominent, one time the Babylonians were prominent, one time the British were prominent. Now the Americans are prominent. After some time it will be finished. So anyway, when the British came to India, they presumed that everything here is wrong because it's not like Britain. People don't think like we do, therefore they must be wrong. And they made propaganda that Indian people are simply all backward. It means foolish. You can see what was written in the newspapers and journals at that time. That the governor of India, he was writing that the average Hindu, his intelligence is no more than that of a dog. But actually there's so much knowledge there. Just like even anthropologists, they say that you can measure the development of a people's culture by its language. If the language is very simple with a very limited vocabulary, then it's understood that the people are not very cultured or intellectually developed. Just like there are some tribes in Africa, their whole language consists of no more than 300 words. Go, eat, kill, smash. They don't have many words. They're not very cultured. But if you find a language which is highly developed, you can understand that the culture is also highly developed. Just like we understand that Russian is a highly complex language. And my friends who have taken the trouble to learn it, they say that it resembles Sanskrit in its complexity. Because Sanskrit is the world's most complex language. For the average student to master all branches of Sanskrit grammar takes 12 years. Because Sanskrit is especially meant for philosophical understanding of the absolute truth. Therefore, it is necessary to define things most precisely. Precisely means accurately. Now, we find that the Vedic literatures, they're all written in Sanskrit. Very great works, just like the Mahabharata, that is the biggest book in the world. And there are many great books like this, very big books. Just like you see, we have one book here, Bhagavad Gita. Can you see this? So, we have another book called the Bhagavad Purana. So, that one book is in 20 volumes this size.
Actually, in Russian, it will be more.
Yeah. In Russian?
Maybe 50 or 60.
Yeah. So, say it. And we have so many books. Vishnu Purana, Brihannaradiya Purana, Brahmanda Purana, Brahmavaivarta Purana, Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta Sutra Sa, so many different books of knowledge. These are all composed in Sanskrit. Very highly developed knowledge on all different subjects of life. So how can it be concluded that Vedic culture is ignorant? Rather, those who say it is ignorant, they are simply expressing their own ignorance. So anyway, this is just like an introductory talk. There are so many things to discuss. And practically, even in millions of lifetimes, you can't come to the end of knowledge. That's another famous quote from Isaac Newton, who was considered the greatest genius of his age. But he said that, when I consider my knowledge, I think it's like I'm walking on a beach and I've taken two or three little grains. He said knowledge is like a great beach. And I feel I've taken two or three little grains. So anyway, you can go on studying so many different things. But the real goal of knowledge is to come to a conclusion. And the conclusion of Vedic knowledge is, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Vedaischa sarvaraham eva vedyaha. In all the Vedas, the object of knowledge is Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supreme Person, who is known as God in English, or Boga in Russian, or so many different languages. So the ultimate goal of knowledge is to understand Krishna, and to surrender our lives in devotion to Him. That will make our own individual lives peaceful and successful. And if this knowledge is spread in human society, that will also make human society very nice. So I'm going to end this lecture here, and if there are any questions or comments, I'd like to take them. Yes.
What do you preach?
What are we preaching? Well, I just gave an idea of it for the last hour or so. I can summarize it again. That human life is not meant for simply living as animals, simply eating, sleeping, and having sex. But human life should be for understanding God. God can particularly be understood through the Vedic knowledge. According to the Vedic knowledge, Krishna is God, and we can understand Him by the process of devotion. This lady has a question.
First question was simple misunderstanding, explained it. And second question is, how connected Jesus Christ and our religion?
Well, she just said it, Krishna Christos. The name is practically the same. Jesus means the Anointed One, and Christos means of God.
Anointed.
Anyway, Christos means of God. So, of God means of Krishna. Jesus said to worship the Father who art in heaven, and that Father is Krishna. So, Christianity and Christianity, there is no difference.
You heard that somewhere in Russia it was supposed to open the Sanskrit school.
I'm sorry, I don't know anything about it. If you find out, please let me know. You can explain about that.
If I
just like to say something a little more about the Sanskrit.
He is telling that his suggestion.
Do it in Chibuksana.
Yeah.
Good suggestion. Now, one thing you'll find: Sanskrit language and Russian language have many similarities. What's the Russian word for question?
Vopros.
Word for question is vapros.
Vapros.
So Sanskrit is prashna. Then, sugar?
Sahar.
Sugar, sahar.
Sahar.
Sanskrit is sarkam.
Yes. Mata.
Mata. Mata is exactly the same. And the Russian grammar also, every word in a different case, it becomes declined. It becomes declined. That is very much part of Sanskrit. That is the same in Sanskrit grammar, not in Western European languages. In Western European languages, this is very little.
Bhog is Bhagavan.
Sanskrit is Bhagavan.
You accept that in the universe there is one God, and does you accept that, or does you consider that He influences the consciousness and the soul of people?
Yeah, God, by very definition, there is only one God. If there is more than one, then He's not God. Because God, by very definition, is supreme. In Sanskrit it is said, asamurdva. It means, no one and nothing is equal to Him, no one or nothing is superior to Him. So there is only one God within the universe, and not only within the universe, but outside the universe also. Beyond the material universe, there is the spiritual universe. So, certainly God, He is influencing, but He gives us our independence also. He doesn't force us. He requests us. I think He has another question to us.
So, if it's so that God is one, then how He allows the existence of so many religions, systems, and also how He allows that different people, they fighting under the name of religion. For example, you say that Jesus Christ is the son of Krishna, but at the same time you said so many words against Christianity. So how is it the...
No, I didn't say, actually I didn't say anything against Christianity.
So I'm not finished. And he says that is it the real evidence about the existence of God in such a conclusion, then if He loves so many.
Now, first thing, just for clarification, I didn't speak against Christianity, because Christianity means the teachings of Jesus Christ. But what I spoke against was the misuse of Christ's teachings. Now, as far as there being different religious systems which appear to be competing with each other, that is man's foolishness. God is one, and He has sent His representatives to teach knowledge of God in different circumstances. And many great messengers of God have come to teach in different places and different times. But because we have this mentality, just like I was describing, someone who's British thinks, I am British and British are best. Or someone is thinking, I am Chinese and Chinese are best. So in the same way, people may think, this is my religion and my religion is best. Without going very deeply into the subject matter or trying to understand it. God is one and religion cannot be two. God doesn't want to see, are we Muslim, Christian, Hindu, or whatever. He wants to see how much we love Him, not simply how much we're externally following different formulas. All great spiritual teachers teach us to love God. That is what Jesus Christ was teaching. For instance, He did, after Jesus Christ, so much organization came. And later, different parts of the organization, they broke up and they fought with each other. But this is not what Christ taught. Christ taught to tolerate. He said, if someone slaps you on the cheek, show the other cheek. So, religion is given by God through His representatives. But man has the tendency to grossly misuse it. Therefore, from time to time, God sends more representatives so that we can understand the essence of religion very clearly. But it is the nature of man, in his contaminated state, to accept that which is false or artificial rather than the essence. It is the nature of man to accept the external and not the essence. Just like when Jesus Christ was preaching in Palestine, He was considered a heretic. Heretic means like kafir. Something like that. He was considered, in English they say heathen, heretic.
Yeah,
he was considered a very dangerous person.
Sorry.
It was considered that he was teaching against the standard religion of the time. And in many ways, Jesus was. Because the people who were supposed to be representing God were misrepresenting. So Jesus Christ stood against that. And they had him. As a result of this, they wanted to crucify Him. So God, He does send His representatives to teach us the truth. But He doesn't force us. He gives us the choice to use our intelligence to try to understand. So it's up to us to try to understand properly. If God forced us, there would be no meaning to preaching at all. We would simply be just like robots. But God doesn't want us to be robots. God wants us to love Him. Love means that we voluntarily surrender. Do these ladies have any questions?
How your religion dealing with family relations, and does it allow us to live together different opposite sex? And second question about our clothes. What does it mean?
Now, when you say your religion, that means the same thing that our esteemed rector or principal was saying. It's not my religion.
Yes.
It's not something that I have dreamed up. I didn't sit in my house for a few years and make up a whole set of things, and now I'm speaking. Religion must come from God. If it doesn't come from God, then it's not religion. Now, different religious cultures, in different places, religious cultures have developed differently. And there are different rules for family life. Just like in Islam or Hinduism, polygamy is allowed. In Christianity, it is not. So these are different social rules. They do not constitute the essence of religion. The essence of religion is to love God. Whether you have one wife or 10 wives or no wives, the essence is to love God. Now, in traditional Vedic culture, there are 4 orders of life. The first is called Brahmachari. That means student life. From the age of 5 till about 25, the child leaves home, his parents take him away from, they take him to a teacher. It's like a boarding school. Do you know what that is? Where the children live away from their parents?
In Russian it's called internat.
The idea is that in the beginning of life, children, they should be educated very well and disciplined also. And they should learn a detachment from family life. Because after all, whether we like it or not, we have to become detached from our family. At the time of death, all the family members are separated. So at the age of 20 to 25, the brahmachari, he may enter the grihastha ashram. That means he may go home and get married. I mean, she asked the question, is he going to listen to the reply or not? So at the age of 20 to 25, another point I made is that as long as he's in brahmachari life, he is strictly celibate. Sex life is only allowed within marriage. So people in the modern age, they don't usually agree with this. But actually it's the fact that if sex is restricted to within marriage also, unless it's restricted within marriage only, then there cannot be peace or stability in human society. So then he may go home and get married and help to look after his parents in their old age and live a very responsible life as a family. Responsibility and duty are emphasized in all areas of Vedic life. Not simply that you get married, you have 2 or 3 children, and then you say, oh, I don't like this anymore. Therefore, divorce. And let the wife and children go to hell. So that is not encouraged in Vedic. It's not allowed in Vedic. So after household life, when someone becomes older, when his children are grown up, then he may enter the vanaprastha stage. That means he continues to live with his family, but he turns over the family affairs to the older children and starts to develop a mood of wisdom and detachment. And at the end of life is the final stage, sannyas, which means complete detachment from family life to fully concentrate on God. Now, of course, in the modern society,